Welcome to the Getting Off Course podcast. I'm your host, Josh Waldron, and this is episode number 11. I'm joined today by Mike Wolf, a former college golfer who's now pursuing the ever-elusive PGA Tour card. Mike is also the co-host of a podcast called Traveling Athlete, where he discusses the grind of mini tour life and what it takes to make it at the next level. Mike, thanks for joining me today.
Appreciate you having me on.
I want to jump right into it here. I have a lot of curiosity questions for you, and I think that some of my listeners have the same questions or similar ones. But let's kind of start with your background. As fate would have it, you didn't pick up a golf club until you were 14 years old. How did you get introduced to the game?
My dad was a big golfer, and I never really got into it because I was like pretty small growing up, and I played every other sport, and every other sport just seems more fun than golf to a kid. At least back like when I was a kid, that's what it seemed like. Nowadays, I feel like every kid's picking up a golf club. But I just grew up playing hockey, baseball, basketball, you know, all like the main sports, football here and there. But my dad told me to try out for the golf team in high school. And that summer, I just started playing a bunch and actually broke 80 twice in the tryouts. So I just, you know, kind of got the hang of things pretty quick playing, and coming from other sports like hockey and baseball, it just made it a little easier to pick up.
That's interesting. You know, I played baseball growing up. That was the sport that I was the best at. And I felt like it was hard for me to transition from baseball to golf. So you must be more talented than I am in general.
I think hockey had something to do with that as well.
Sure. So this new experience, did it become like a hobby right away? Was it an obsession? Like, how did you get hooked?
I'll tell you what. So there was a lot of guys that played golf in my high school. And so after school every day, we would basically just pick a course around the Cincinnati area and we would just go play. And I think that group of people kind of just made me fall in love with the game. And you know, I was playing with guys who were a lot better than me, and it just made me want to get better. So I started playing every single day. I mean, there was no breaks for me. I just always wanted to be on the golf course, and I was always sneaking on other golf courses. And yeah, it just turned into an obsession really quick.
Love it. So during your senior year of high school, let's fast forward a little bit. You receive an offer to play golf at the University of Cincinnati. Describe that feeling.
My first swing coach was the coach for the University of Cincinnati. So I saw him for a few years, and he was kind of asking me what I wanted to do or where I wanted to go. And I mean, I was in Ohio. So like initially I'm like, I just want to go south. Like, I just want to get out of the cold weather. I want to play year round. And I was just, you know, waiting for like some D1 offers to come in, and they weren't really coming in. So he goes, if you don't have anywhere to go, or if you don't like any of the schools that are looking at you, you always have a spot on my team. And so I just kind of took that as like, all right, well, this guy believes in me, so I'm just going to go here. I always grew up rooting for University of Cincinnati. I thought it'd be cool to play for him. And, you know, it was just a pretty cool experience.
So were you there? This is just a random question. Were you there during the Mick Cronin years?
I was, yeah. Yeah. Mick and my coach were really good friends.
All right. Have you ever seen Mick like not yelling at someone?
Yeah, he's actually a really nice guy. But on the basketball court, it's just, he's a ticking time bomb.
Oh, you bet. I always love watching him on the sidelines. It's good times.
Yeah, when that jacket comes off, it's crazy.
All right, so you had the chance to play D1 golf, which is a big life achievement. Good work there. However, I want to skip over those years and talk about what you've been up to since then. So in 2016, you decided to turn pro. And let's assume my listeners know nothing about this process. I want you to tell us how you arrived at that decision to pursue golf professionally, and like, what are the first steps a person takes when they decide to go pro?
It's really not that difficult. Is if you make money playing golf, you're a professional. So all you have to do is just sign up for a tournament as a pro. I wouldn't recommend that because tournaments get more expensive and then you're just kind of donating your money. So you just kind of sign up as a pro, and then once you start making money, you lose your amateur status and you just keep chasing it. So it's really nothing, not like a big like kind of thing, you know?
So you're the first mini tour player I've had on the podcast. Help us understand like what your life looks like right now. Maybe start with like a glimpse into your daily schedule.
Okay, so when I'm not traveling, so today, like after we're done doing this, I'm gonna go stretch, go to the gym for about an hour, maybe 2 hours. I was just on a plane for 6 hours yesterday, so you gotta kind of loosen up. But then I'm practicing 6 to 8 hours at least a day, playing, practicing, doing all that. And then for mini tour guys like myself, I've had multiple side jobs. So I've been like a bartender, I've been a caddy, just stuff to like keep the money flowing in because there's not that much money on on mini tours. So after I practice, there's times where I have to go like close the bar till like 2 a.m. And the next day I'm, right back at it. So every single day I'm practicing 6 to 8 hours, possibly working, possibly not. Just depends on what my schedule, kind of has for me. I mean, so this week I'm gonna be getting ready for a tournament next week, and then next week I'll be gone for 4 days just playing a tournament.
When you're practicing, are you just playing rounds or are you focusing on specific skills? Like, what does the practice look like?
So my practice is I spend about 2 hours on the range every day, hitting wedges, hitting irons, getting my driver ready, and then I'm spending 2 hours in the chipping green and 2 hours in the putting green. And then if I have time, I'll go play nine. If I can, I'll play 18. Obviously, sometimes I have to sacrifice an hour or two from like either hitting balls or putting or chipping to play 18. It really just depends on what I need to work on. So right now I need to get reps on the golf course. So I'll probably be spending more time out there hitting different shots or playing from even like the forward tees to learn how to score like and get that number like really low and feel comfortable at five under, feel comfortable at 6 or 7 under, because that's kind of what it takes to to make it. And so you just kind of have to find your formula of practice. Everyone's different. I work very hard, and I've seen guys who could just practice 3 to 4 hours a day and call it a day and play very well. So it just all depends on who you are.
Do you have anyone that's working with you, or is this an independent effort at this point?
I have a few people I bounce ideas off of. My main guy, his name's Jake Gilmer. He's out in Vegas. I see him every now and then when I can get out there. But I have another guy from Cincinnati, Sonny Ranalla. He's like I kind of just like bounce swing ideas off of him, practice routines. I have a weight trainer. I don't have a mental coach, but just I talk to a bunch of guys and you just kind of take certain things from different people and make it your own.
Yeah. So let's zoom out a little bit. You kind of gave us like a typical daily schedule if you're not traveling. What does a typical week or month look like for you?
All right, well, last month I was just playing in Monday qualifiers. So I was in Phoenix, I was in Florida, then I went back to Florida for a week. It's really random. There's no like set schedule. And there's so many different routes people take to get to the PGA Tour or try to get to the PGA Tour. So, like some guys just like to do mini tour events all year and then just do Q school. Other guys chase Monday qualifiers, which is what I'm trying to do right now. So every week you're going to a different city playing one round and it's a shootout. And usually like 65 or lower usually gets in, but that's another route you can take. Or you could go like the developmental tour route, which is like Canadian tour or Latin America tour, and you go to Q school for that. And I've never gone to Korn Ferry Q school, but I've done the Latin thing a few times, and it really just depends on what route you take, and there's never really a set schedule because there's so many random events that you can play in.
So do most players in your shoes have like a home club that they're practicing at, or how does that work? Like, where are you getting your rounds in?
Yeah, so I'm a member at a course out here. And it's just kind of easy to have a home base, somewhere you can go consistently and, you know, kind of feel at home and, you know, really set up camp wherever you want on the golf course or on like the practice facilities. So there's not many guys that I know that bounce around like public courses or bounce around country clubs for that matter. But you just kind of find a place that has a good value for the price and just make yourself at home.
So again, not everyone who listens to this podcast is a serious golfer. Since you have a college degree and you're living this firsthand, I want you to define a few terms that my listeners might hear tossed around. So the first one would be, what is a mini tour event?
A mini tour event is basically just that's a good question. How do I describe this? It's just like a golf tour that's not the PGA or okay. Not run by the PGA. It's just a small tournament, small professional tournament.
So then you specifically referenced Monday qualifiers. What is a Monday qualifier?
Every week, for the most part, if it's not an invitational and it's like an open event, so like Farmers Insurance Open, the PGA Tour has a Monday qualifier to get in. And so PGA Tour events have pre-Monday qualifiers. So you have to like make it out of the pre-qualifier to get into the Monday qualifier. But Korn Ferry, there's just the Monday qualifier. So it's, you're just trying to qualify for that that week's event. So wherever it's at. So like when I tried to do the Farmers Insurance, that was in San Diego. So I went down to San Diego. They had a course offsite that wasn't Torrey Pines, where I think like 120 guys play for 3 to 5 spots, sometimes 2 spots. So yeah, that's Monday qualifier.
Is there a reason why that's the route you're taking right now?
I think it's the quickest way to get into a tournament. And I feel like once I get into a tournament, I can play well enough to get into the next one. So if I top 25, you get into that next tournament that next week. And then if you keep like kind of racking up like good finishes, you can potentially earn status on tour.
What is a pro-am event?
There's a lot of different ones. Like you have the one at Pebble Beach that they just had where a bunch of AMs came in and like it's a celebrity thing and they had like a side game. I actually played in a mini tour pro-am event in November, which is actually pretty cool, but there's really not that many of them. But you're basically just playing with 3 other amateurs and yourself, and they have their own game going on while you're still playing in a tournament against the other pros. So it's a way. Usually those are tournaments for like charities or they're some kind of fundraiser. It's a tournament, but you're playing with like the normal golfer or like the average golfer.
Great. Thanks for helping us there. So is there any strategy in your event selection? Like when you're thinking about where you're going to play next or where you're going to play during this 2022, do you have a strategy for that?
I'd say the only strategy I have is I try to have like a financial strategy. So I really just try to budget like what I can do each month. And if I do have a preference on where to play, I'll obviously pick the course that I think I can play better at. But that's pretty much it. It's more of a financial thing than anything.
Yeah, so what types of entry fees are we talking about for these events?
So like for Monday qualifiers, like a Korn Ferry Monday qualifier is $500. If you don't have any status on tour. The tournament I'm playing in next week is a 4-day event and it's $1,000. So it kind of varies. Like there's a few events in Florida, like one day, like mini tour events that are like $200, you know? So it really varies. And like, obviously the less you pay, the less prize money there is, but you know, it's like, it's honestly like gambling. So you're just kind of betting on yourself.
Sure. So you've done things, bartending, caddying. These are the jobs that are kind of funding your events.
Yeah. I mean, I have some backers as well, but, for like everyday life and like rent, you know, and all that, like, bartending was pretty big. I've been in and out of the bar for the last like 5-6 years. So whenever I can pick up a shift, I'll try to do it just so, you know, I can go out to eat one night or, you know, do something fun.
Yeah. So how do you get to these events? Are you driving? Are you flying?
In Florida, I fly. I have family who lives in Florida, so I just kind of crash with them and rent a car when I get there. But anything west of Texas, I'll drive to. Yeah, so it just depends on how far the drive is.
And so when you're not in Florida, where are you staying? Like, what kind of, is it a hotel? What are you doing?
Oh, so I actually live in LA. Like, my home base is in Los Angeles, and I lived in Jupiter, Florida for a few years. Wanted to change the scenery, and I kind of made my way out west, and now for the last 4 years I've been in LA.
All right, so from what I can tell, most of these events are Florida, Arizona, California. Anywhere I'm missing?
Those are probably the most. But I mean, like, you have stuff in like Nevada, Utah, Texas, but not as much as the three you just stated before.
Is there a place that you'd prefer or a climate that you'd prefer to play in?
California. I like Florida, but it's so humid. Yeah. Sometimes, and I'm not like a huge humidity guy. Plus, like, my hands sweat a lot, so I have to go through gloves like crazy, and that's kind of annoying. Arizona is cool, but it's like desert golf, so I don't know. It's a little different than what I'm used to, but I think California is a good mix between, like, it kind of reminds me of a mix between like Midwest and Florida with like dry air.
Yeah,
so. It's why I kind of like it out here.
Yeah, humidity, man. It's brutal. So, Bryson had some comments on a podcast last year, and I know you've seen these, where he basically said any player outside of the top 165 on the tour's money list is actually losing money. And he was referring to guys that have made it, so to speak. Mm-hmm. The PGA has, you know, a filthy amount of money to work with. Do you think it's fair that so little money exists for aspiring professionals, or is that just kind of the name of the game?
This is actually a main topic that I talk about on my podcast. PGA 100% kind of exploits their players and only caters to the top guys for the most part. They're always looking for the next Tiger. They're always looking for the next Rory or Jordan Spieth or someone that can just make the face of their tour. And they have a dumb amount of money, and all they do is raise up the prices. Like, last year, Monday qualifiers were $400. Now they're $100 more. There's less spots available, and they did that PIP thing last year, the $40 million thing.
Yeah, that was crazy.
And that's just going to the top guy who really doesn't need that money, mm-hmm. You know? So, and the developmental tours are there's like no trickle down. Like, Canadian tours, like, no money. The Latin America tours, like, no money. So those comments were very accurate. I don't really agree a lot with what Bryson says, but it's kind of true. That's why I was like kind of interested in this whole like Saudi thing that was going on. It's like there needs to be another competition because the DP World Tour and PGA Tour are just kind of in bed together. They're like, all right, let's just make a ton of money. Mm-hmm. But there needs to be another another competition. So like the PGA Tour could be like, oh, we're going to start doing secondary events, or we're going to have our own, let's say like single A. Cause I would say like the Canadian Tour and Latin America Tour is like the single A in, you know, like in baseball, or double A. There's just so many things that they can do that they don't do. And it, they always say it's a nonprofit organization, but come on. Like Phil even said, I think a few weeks ago, Phil said that the PGA Tour can hold tournaments for like 10 years with no sponsors and still make money.
Yeah.
Or still not lose money. So something along those lines. I probably butchered that quote, but it's just, the more you see it, it's just kind of ridiculous. But it's what you sign up for. So,
you know, not to bore you to death, I know you're 3 hours behind on sleep, so I don't want to put you to sleep here. But I used to be a history teacher, and generally speaking, monopolies are not a good thing. And right now, I mean, the PGA is the monopoly. So we'll see what comes of the Saudi Golf League, or what that, if it encourages any changes on the PGA front. But I feel for you, man.
Yeah. It's I mean, it's a grind, and it's not like that it's going to like hold me back from still, you know, chasing it, but nothing worth having comes easy.
It's a good way to look at it. On that note, let's talk about some of your successes so far on this journey. Like, what's going well?
How I determine success is just how I play and how I feel about my game. And where I came from 5 years ago, I feel like I've become like such a better player. And there's things I still need to work on, a little physically, more mentally. But I don't really base my success off of a score. It's more of like how I can perform in these events. You know what I mean? So if I feel like, for example, last tournament I played in was on Monday, and I turn at 3 under, playing great. And then I hit just like a ton of balls in the water in the back nine, just coming in, limping in. And I actually finish, I think I parred out my last like 4 holes, but it was just like one of those things where I had myself right there to win a tournament. And that's what I'm happy about. I can't come out like, oh, you choked, or, oh, you didn't shoot 500 par or 300 par.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more of just like taking the next step for me. And it's not results based, for like scoring or tournaments. It's more of just like a feel based kind of thing.
So when you're in that round and you start hot, you're playing well, and things start to go wrong, what's your strategy for dealing with that?
I usually just try to do whatever I can to keep the ball in play. So I'll just start hitting little punt shots and just give myself an opportunity to get the ball on the green at 2, and just keep the ball out of trouble. I mean, golf is a game of managing mistakes, and that's why the top guys are where they are. They don't make mistakes. And if they do, they come back from them. So if you can manage your mistakes, you're going to be pretty damn good.
So you feel like you're making progress. You're thinking more about like stuff that you're aware of internally, not the score per se, but you know that you've grown over the last 5 years. What are some areas that aren't going well, or areas that you feel like you still need to work on?
I would say a little mentally. I get in my head a little bit. I try to be too perfect. I try to make my swing look too perfect, or any part of my game look too perfect. So that's something that I've been working on. It's definitely something that's held me back a little bit. It's like there'll be days where I'm like striping on the range. Then I'll take a video and I'll hate how my swing looks. And then I'll start worrying about like how it looks over, I was just hitting it well. And that just, you know, that just hurts you in the end. And then you start worrying about stuff that really doesn't matter. And you neglect like your chipping, you neglect your putting, or you neglect your coursework. So for me to like get out of my own way, it's kind of what I need to work on.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. There's some guys right now that are playing pretty well that have strange swings, or at least non-traditional swings. Neiman would be a good example of that.
Yeah.
Not that you need any of my advice or encouragement, because I'm really not even qualified to give it. But don't worry about that swing. Just get the ball wherever it needs to go.
Oh, I know, man. I see guys like Jon Rahm. Like, I think Jon Rahm has the most talent on tour. He's just so solid at everything. And guys like him and like Matt Wolf, they just have like crazy swings. Even Jordan Spieth isn't even that great of a swing, but they just get it done.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as you don't have the Charles Barkley swing, you just keep doing your thing.
I was going to say, I grew up watching Adam Scott and Tiger Woods, and, you know, you always just wanted to be like them. So, yeah, just got to get that out of my head.
So, what are you like 30? How old are you at this point?
I'm 29.
All right. I'm a few years ahead of you, but I was right in the Tiger Woods heyday. And a lot like what you referenced at the beginning, when I was a kid, I viewed pretty much every sport as cool, but golf was one of the ones that was on the not cool list. I mean, that has changed, yeah. But yeah. All right, so we're going to end our time together with a 10-question lightning round.
Okay.
But before we shift gears, I want you to give me, and you have a free range here, your best, your favorite, or your funniest tournament story.
Ooh. I mean, golfers are nuts, man. Like, they just... I'll just give you the most recent one. So, Monday. You know what Circle T Scotty Camerons are?
Yeah.
They go for, like... They can go anywhere from, like, $1,000 to, like, $12,000.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, this guy I played with on Monday wasn't making that many putts, wasn't playing bad. But on the 17th hole, he missed, like, a 6-footer for birdie, and he just, like... This dude, like 6'8", like big guy, had a Circle T putter that was probably $3,000 to $5,000. And we're riding the cart together. He puts his putter back in his bag, and we're about to drive the next hole. He takes it out. He goes, hold on one second. Walks over to the fairway, like right in front of the green that we just played on, and just tomahawks it into the ground. And I just, like, I couldn't help start laughing, because I'm like, this guy is nuts. Like, just, I don't know, as a mini tour guy, and you see something like that, you're just like, holy shit, golfers are nuts.
Yeah. You know, I've listened to a few episodes of your podcast, and I heard a story. I mean, you told a story about a guy who was like ready to fight you because you just called him out.
Oh, and being, yeah,
obnoxious the whole time.
Yeah, that was, yeah. That was, that guy was like cussing. He broke like two clubs during the round. He was going to shoot probably 85 to 90 in a professional event. It was, and we got put in the clock twice. And, I just finally said something to him, like, dude, we got it. We got to calm down. And he just comes right up to me. And I was like, oh, here we go. And I wasn't playing that great either. So, like, I wasn't happy. I don't really get mad on the golf course, but, he got right up in my face. I'm like, what the hell is going on? And he was a smaller guy. He's like, I'm 6'3", and he was probably like 5'7", 5'8". And it was just, it was like one of those things where, like, you can't not laugh at that. So I'm like, what are you going to do? Are you going to, like, hit me right now? We have two rules officials, and, like, what are we doing here? So, yeah, that was a wild one. I don't know how I forgot that.
So this is just another curiosity question, too. When you're paired with other people, I'd imagine that actually can affect your game. When you go to these events and you're put with someone who's either in a good frame of thought or someone who is just downright negative, like, it can actually rub off on you. Would that be accurate?
Yeah. You got guys who play super slow. You got guys who get mad. You got guys who, like, don't take the flag out on, like, 3-footers. Just... like, a lot of this, like, dumb stuff that's just like, all right, let's play golf. It's not that difficult, you know. But, you know, guys just have their weird things. I mean, I'm sure I do. I just don't know. But as long as you keep a good pace and you don't get in anyone else's way, it's good. But honestly, it's a little rare because, like I said, golfers are weird.
Yeah.
Golfers are kind of psychotic. So,
well, fun. Thanks for all the information. Let's jump into this lightning round. We'll start with some mini tour questions, and then we're going to talk about your hometown football team, the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, boy. All right.
All right. What's the farthest you've driven to compete in an event?
10 hours.
What was the drive? Where did you have to drive from?
LA to Salt Lake.
Okay. I've never taken that drive. I've done most of the East Coast. I've done a lot of the Midwest. What do you go through on the way?
Just a bunch of desert and mountains. It's actually a pretty cool drive, but at night it gets a little dicey.
Yeah. Fun.
Yeah.
So I've heard all sorts of crazy stories about mini tour competitors. Have you ever slept in your car to save money?
Yep. Multiple times. I actually drove across, like when COVID first happened, one of my college roommates was living in Tampa and LA shut down and no one really knew what was going on. And he had a two-bedroom Airbnb for 2 months. And he was like, dude, you should just come out here before it was open. And so I just hopped in my car and drove. And I didn't stay in a hotel. Like, I slept in my car for 2 nights.
Fun times.
Yeah.
My back hurts just thinking about it.
Oh, it didn't feel good on my back.
So, question 3. In your quest to become a pro, has your bank account ever hit 0?
Yep. First year I turned pro. In like 5 months, I just lost money. Or all my money, I should say, and moved home. That's when I started bartending. And now everywhere I go, everywhere I live now, I always have always make sure I have something that I can get to. And I would say the only light that COVID kind of shined on me was no one wants to work anymore. So people just reach out if they need help. So
yeah.
I can work wherever.
Yeah, it's a good time to be a worker. Sort of. There's some qualifications for that too. All right. Yeah. Question 4. Do you have a go-to pre-competition meal?
You know what? I don't. If anything, I'll just get Starbucks and like just get a breakfast sandwich and a coffee. That's probably what I go with. Just depends on your area. I mean, I've been in places where the only fast food place there was like a KFC. Otherwise, you just eat at the hotel or casino.
Yeah.
I've been in some weird places.
Weirdest one on the list? You want to throw that into the lightning round?
Yeah, Parker, Arizona. It's the middle of nowhere. It's right on the border of California and Arizona. And there's nothing there besides a casino and a Quality Inn.
I'll look it up, put it on my bucket list. What's the best round you've shot in an important event?
Let's see. I shot 65 in a mini tour event and came in third, which kind of sucked. But I'd say like the hardest round of golf I played and played well was I was playing up a mini tour up in Napa at Silverado Resort. Where they have a PGA Tour event. And the first day, the wind was so strong that, like, the flags were bending, like, halfway down. It was ridiculous. And I even looked at the tournament director. I'm like, there's no way we're playing this, right? He's like, no, we have to. Like, otherwise we won't be able to play the full tournament. And so we played. And, like, the first hole, I hit my 6-iron, probably 205. I had 145 yards in. And I hit a punch 6-iron, and it came up 20 yards short.
Wow.
But I ended up shooting 73, and I was leading by 3. And it was the hardest round. I've never been so tired after a round of golf in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, people underestimate the wind. I mean, the wind is a real thing. When it's howling, it changes everything.
Oh, it's crazy. And the difference between Florida golf and West Coast golf is everyone in California and Arizona hit the ball so high and everything's very high. In Florida, everyone's hitting these low, like, punch shots, and, like, their driver goes super low. And so when I'm out here, like, people think I hit it low. Then when I'm in Florida, people think I hit it high because, like, I'm trying to, like, you know, just kind of juggle it. It's pretty crazy.
Sure.
It's just different because it's so windy in Florida and it's pretty calm out here.
What about your worst round in an important event?
Oof. I've had a bunch of those. First one that comes to mind, I was playing in the Honda Classic Monday qualifier, and I was 2 under through 5. And the 6th hole, not a tough hole, but I made a 10. And then just lost it after that. So it's just like, in a Monday qualifier, you need to, you can't make a double, anything worse than a double bogey.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just shot yourself out of it. So that hurt a little bit. That's the first one that came to mind.
So you've lived in Ohio, Florida, California, anywhere I'm missing?
Mm-hmm. Nope, those three.
If you had to spend the rest of your life in one of those places, where would you choose?
California, for sure. Yeah, I've fallen in love with it out here. I tried to move the last 2 years back to Florida, and like I looked at Tampa, I looked at Miami, looked back at West Palm where I lived before, and every time I come back to, I live in Santa Monica, out in California, and every time I come back out here, it's just feels like home.
Yeah. You know, I got to go to San Diego many years ago, but it's one of the only times in my life where I got sunburned and I didn't realize I was getting sunburned. Like, it was just so nice out.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, San Diego is awesome.
All right, the last three questions are about the Cincinnati Bengals, or as my college buddy Jason called them, the Bingles. Your favorite player on the Bengals?
It's got to be Joe Burrow.
Yeah, he's fun.
You can't not like that guy.
Yeah, yeah, he's fun to root for.
Yeah, he is.
Will the Bengals win a Super Bowl in the next 5 years?
No. I'm very pessimistic when it comes to Cincinnati sports, and they're always good enough to break your heart. And I don't think they will. It'd be great if they do. But I just don't see it. Their division's too good. The AFC is too good. And the owner for the Bengals just doesn't like to spend money. So,
well, maybe you got the reverse jinx in play here, and we'll see.
Hey, You gotta set the bar low. I'll be happy when it happens.
All right, final question for you. If your life, Mike, depended on the outcome of a football game, would you rather have Patrick Mahomes or Joe Burrow as your quarterback?
Oh, man. The team's the same?
Teams are the same.
I gotta go with Joe Burrow. I can't not say him.
Good. I'm sure he's.
But if you ask me, Tom Brady, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you say Tom Brady, then I'm picking Brady.
All right, Mike. Thanks for joining me today. Really appreciate your time. When's your next event?
Next week, March 1st to the 4th, Golden State Tour. I'll be playing a course called Saboba Springs. Been out there a bunch, so I'm excited to get back out there.
Great. Good luck, man.
Appreciate it.
Is there anything that you'd like to plug?
Yeah, just my podcast, Traveling Athlete. It's on Spotify, Apple, you know, all the wherever you get your podcasts. Yeah, that's it. Just listen. Just me and my co-host David. We just talk about our journey. We are like the same but completely different people. He's a great guy. Knows his stuff. It's a lot of fun doing it with him. So just give us a listen, and I appreciate you having me on here.
Yeah, you bet. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check out gettingoffcourse.com to see the show notes or to listen to past episodes. You can also send me an email at gettingoffcourse@gmail.com. And if you have the time, please rate, review, and subscribe. Getting Off Course is presented by Par 3 Near Me. Visit par3nearme.com to find a par 3 or executive golf course near you.